You're listening to Go Fish with Mike Buck on AM 690, The Fishing Answer. This segment is being brought to you by the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council at wpcouncil.org. Now, troll on in.
Okay, so here's the deal. Every now and again, we have to pop a bunch of science at you. And you know what? Maybe seeming like, in the very beginning, like a big mouthful, it all actually has a tremendous amount of sense. So as you know that we've been getting you ready for the 129th meeting of the Science and Statistical Committee. 129th, that means in the 40 years, they get together, it looks like about three times a year, and to talk about this stuff. Well, here comes one up at Maui. And before we introduce you to our scientists in the program, we got Josh DeMello, who is the fisheries analyst, to tell you a little bit about this, what this is all about. And I know, Josh, that sometimes it's hard to make sense of something on the radio when you can't see stuff. But let's talk about this a little bit. What is this? What, in the first place, when we talk about science and statistical committees, what is that?
So each of the 8 regional fishery management councils has this group that's mandated by the Magnuson Act to look at science and determine what the best scientific advice is for an issue or a problem with the fishing. And so before
it goes, and by the way, aren't we finding more and more that no matter what we end up with, somebody says, okay, well, what's the science?
And sometimes, you know, we're always asking is this science good? Mm-hmm. I mean, can we trust this science? And does it show what we would expect or what we're seeing in real life? And so this group provides that scientific advice to our council. Mm-hmm. And so the council will have the science advice, then it'll have the monitoring advice from the plan team, it'll have recommendations from the fishermen and advisors, and then the council will take everything into account, both the science and the socioeconomics and the cultural and everything else.
Okay, so now in some days in the past, they said, well, that it's just like you just throwing a dart at the dartboard, wherever it said, that's the report. Unfortunately, that's, you know, and that may be the case in the past. And maybe because of that, a lot of people out in the community, which is you and me, we didn't accept the science or we didn't accept the statistics. Now it turns out that there's a lot better ways to gather this material. And Malloy Saboteur is the fishery scientist at the Western Pacific Regional Fishery Management Council. And that's where he's been spending a good part of his career. He's been here before. But, you know, first of all, in the way of introduction, Malloy, isn't it sort of interesting that you can actually answer a lot more questions scientifically with the science that you have now, because the way you gather the information is more sophisticated than it used to be. Is that kind of accurate?
Right. And there has been a lot of programs that are in place that monitors the fishery, that monitors the health of the ecosystem. You've got observation buoys out there. So all this data comes into play whenever we evaluate the science, and you know, our advisors are in charge of that role.
Let me ask you this. Here's something that's kind of timely. Now, at the time we're recording this segment, we're also looking at now about a month of volcanic activity on the Big Island. A whole bunch of it now, which is coming into the ocean. That must be really interesting for people like yourself. How does this affect, you know, the ecosystem? Because before the eruption and this stuff is spewing into the sea, it was pretty stable in that area. What kind of things happen when you have all of that magma and all that stuff going on in the water?
Yeah, this is one of those natural perturbations that the ecosystem experience. Fortunately, this is more of less frequent perturbations as compared to like land-based sources of pollutions and all that other disturbance in the nearshore ecosystem. So I wouldn't assume anything on what the impacts are going to be at this stage until people are actually out there measuring stuff in the water.
Yeah, and that's going to take a while, right?
Yeah, that's going to take a while.
Don't go there this weekend, my friends. That's not a good idea at all.
It's going to be a hot water in there.
But, you know, isn't it sort of interesting that you say that? Because, you know, there's people across the country, and even some people listening to this program that are listening from another place, they don't know how remote a place that is. And it doesn't really affect much of the geography around the islands, the main populated islands, right? It's just where the growth is. That's the new island, after all.
Right. And, you know, scientific principle says that if you have a new substrate that's forming, that's a clean slate for, you know, organisms to recruit.
Yeah, no kidding.
You know, it's going to take a while for that new substrate to, like, acclimatize to the new environment. You know, it's going to be acidic, and you got to wait a while for that substrate to kind of normalize for other other organisms to recruit onto that substrate. And then
it's
going to
be an interesting food chain, right? It's going to be reconstructing from a clean palate, right?
Right.
Here's a whole bunch of lava with nothing. When is it going to start producing?
Right. Yeah. So we don't know when it's going to start producing how much of that can contribute to the fisheries.
Okay. But the reason why, another reason, one of the many reasons why we're doing this program today, Josh, is because even though somebody might be going, that's over my head, in actual fact, what we're going to talk about is this science and the stats as it applies to bottom fishing. And all of a sudden, now you got my attention, because if you're going to start telling me about science, about my opaka-paka or my onaga or my gindai or whatever, you better tell me, we better be able to talk about this.
Exactly. And one of the biggest things that came out of this recent science on bottom fish is it started with collaboration between the scientists and the fishermen.
Mm-hmm.
And that has been the key to getting a stock assessment that is both more trustworthy by mm-hmm. the fishermen and also tightened up by the yeah. by the scientists, so that it's more or less accurate of what they're actually mm-hmm. seeing in the field.
Yeah, interesting. And speaking about that, Malloy, if he sounds a little bit different than me and Josh is because he came from kind of far away. And I guess maybe it's sort of interesting in your career to see even where you came from, even in other parts of the Pacific, that these bottom fish are near and dear to all of us, as far as, okay, you're sometimes the one that's right in front of the fisherman, and the guy's saying, can I trust you? And you're saying, can I trust you?
Right, right. And bottom fish is a prime resource for most of the Pacific islands. Even from, you know, the country that I came from in the Philippines, it is one of the red fish that mm-hmm. That's highly targeted by the small boat fishery. So the science we're talking about here is particularly for the deep seven species, and the dominant catch would be opaka-paka,
mm-hmm.
and followed by onaga, and then the rest of them are what the fishermen would consider as non-targeted fish or
yeah. And by the way, sometimes if somebody's looking for paka or looking for onaga, they start catching some of the others. It's almost bycatch, but it's still a valuable fish because right. those bottom, those deep seven, they're sort of interchangeable. When you can't get one, then the guy goes and fishes for another.
Exactly. And it depends on what depth, which location, and but most of the time it's been pretty consistent that this other five species would pop up when you go out bottom fishing.
Yeah, it is kind of neat. And I know that you've been able to take a look at the ocean. Before, it was based on catch, right? Somebody, they give you a grid where they're fishing or something like that, and you try to determine, is this being depleted or not? Now we can actually look.
Right. One of the features of this new assessment is that, working with the fishermen, they came up with a what we call a fishery-independent estimate of biomass mm-hmm. through fishermen's role is the experimental fishing. And then it got calibrated with a camera system that the Science Center deploys mm-hmm. in some grid areas that they randomly selected, stratified by depth and by habitat. So yeah you can have a camera system out there looking at the fish, counting how many there mm-hmm. are, and then use that as a benchmark or a ground truthing value to see whether your model is working.
Well, let's say that in the past somebody was jumping off a boat with a snorkel or aqualung tank and going down and taking a look around it. Here's how many of these I saw, and here's how many of those I saw. And what you said in the past, and I remember this clearly in the years past, is that in many cases, the presence of the diver or the guy or the people collecting the information scare the species away, so you don't get an accurate count anyway. Now, when you lower a camera down there, I guess after a while, the fish think, well, this is not going to try to eat me, so I'll just do my thing. Is that better science?
They try to mimic, try to get as much video information as they can. That's why they're using this crude estimate called max n, which mm-hmm. is maximum number of fish you can observe at one snapshot.
Yeah.
And and they try to they experimented with cameras with bait, with no bait, mm-hmm. with lights mm-hmm. and no lights. So technology is starting to improve. I mean, you can have like 360 GoPro cameras being deployed like at depths of like more than 100 feet, or even goes down to like 200 plus.
I think, though, you know, that's from the scientific standpoint, Josh, is where Malloy is coming from. But the reality is all these things cost money. And, you know, you guys are expected to do this, and yet you are, I don't want to say at the other end of the dog when it comes time, what programs can we keep? What programs do we have to modify? What programs have to go based on how important the end result is, right? I mean, this stuff we're talking about right now is important, not just economically, but culturally.
And this is probably our biggest small boat fishery that we have in our region, the bottom fish fishery in Hawaii, the deep seven bottom fish fishery in Hawaii.
Is that because of the value of the catch more than anything else? Desirability,
the numbers, yeah. the landings. It's we just don't have a lot of fishermen compared to places like Alaska and other areas. Plus, we're looking at islands that have less population than Oahu in most cases. But it's one of those fisheries that has a long history, and it's really specialized. It's not like you can just go out there and you're going to catch fish. So it's really a fishery that's handed down father to son.
You know what? Thing. That's really true. And you guys and gals that are listening, you understand one thing. If you are a troller, you know, you're an offshore troller, or an offshore guy or gal, and you're using traditional lures and you're dragging lures and hoping for a bite, that's a whole different guy or person, right? You can see a bird, you can see some rubbish, you go catch a fish. But the bottom guys, they have to have a lot of things going. They got to know tides, they got to know depths, they got to know areas, they got to have, you know, like today's, they have to have all the tools, the GPSs and all of that other stuff.
And that's why I think the fishery is really limited to the people who are doing it now and whoever's learning from them.
Yeah, so they're finding out it's hard work, right? I mean, well, some of the young people.
And the highliners, those that catch the most in the fishery, are actually just a handful of guys.
Yeah, yeah.
There's a lot of guys that go bottom fishing, but the guys that are really supporting the markets, it's only a few guys.
Yeah, and that, you know, Malloy, maybe that is an appropriate time to understand that you can only guesstimate. You know, you know these few guys that are the regular guys, and Josh is right. I know six or eight of them, and there's not a whole bunch more. I think it's only really a couple of dozen that really make up, the main real professional bottom guys. But what about all the recreational fisher people that call themselves bottom fishermen, and who knows what they're catching?
Right, and it's kind of a complicated matter. And funny that you brought up that the highliners versus the rest of the field. It's I was writing this specification document in preparing for the council meeting, and I requested the Science Center to give me some information about, okay, look at the CML holders and try
commercial marine license holders.
Commercial CML, marine right. license holders. So they're required to report, right, their catch, and look at their individual catch information and give me the distribution of so we know who what proportion of the total license holders are highliners versus the rest of the crew.
Gotcha.
So in that analysis, it showed that, you know, the upper the upper echelon of this fishing group, the highliners, lands more than 40% of the total catch.
That's a lot.
And you know, if you just look at the middle of the distribution of those license holder, they're only the middle part, they're only contributing 4% of the total
So that must make trying to come up with decisions based on the available stats, that must be highly weighted. So you really must be able to figure that out.
Right. So if you do the impact analysis on changes to the regulations to the bottom fish fishery, majority of the impacts are going to be felt by the highliners.
Yeah. Yeah, and Josh, that's kind of interesting because that means that they would be very reluctant to be too cooperative because everything that happens may affect their quantity or their ability to fish at a certain place or not.
Well, I think these guys that we call the highliners in the fishery are actually the ones that have been on the forefront of trying to get the data better because they know that it's really up to them talking to their fellow fishermen to fill out the forms correctly or to report correctly because they will affect what their annual catch limit is going to be next year.
But what I think is exciting about that is that it seems to be that group is being a little bit more cooperative because sometimes decisions have been made that are beyond their expectations. They're going to open up an area or increase a quota. So it's not all doom and gloom. Every report that comes out, right? It matters.
Right, and to their credit, they've been very cooperative with helping out the scientists, providing smaller fish for them to learn about their growth and age. Yeah. And they've also decided that they don't want what the mainland has in their fishery with individual quotas or shares, that kind of stuff. They decided that they wanted to keep it the way it is and keep it local.
Yeah, and there's all kinds of other push and shove that we won't talk about today. It's about licensing, about that, how many people on the boat have to have a license and all that. But I guess, Malloy, in what you do, that is sort of important because you have to be able to differentiate between somebody who is commercially fishing and somebody just putting food on their table. And in some cases, it's the same person.
Yeah, and you know, not all commercial fishermen are. I mean, not all the fish that they catch they sell. You know? So in our Hawaii 2017 annual stock assessment and fishery evaluation report, there's a new socioeconomic section in that report that describe 89% of the license holders sell their fish. Mm-hmm. So there's that 11% that's not. You know, they weren't recorded as selling their fish. And it's really important to get a handle of the non-commercial catch of the of this fishery, because the assessment only assumes that, you know, it's a one-to-one ratio, because there's no hard number that they can, there's no like monitored data for the non-commercial fishery.
And let me interject into there, because I think this is kind of cool, because a friend of mine said, hey, the next time you get the guys from the council talking about this, ask them about Nabeta, because Nabeta is one of the best kept secrets of all. It's not, I guess, certainly it's not one of the deep seven, but it is a very highly sought after species that you don't really see in the markets, because the guys that can catch them, they take them home and they eat them. I mean, it's like money, isn't it?
Right. And those are, you know, the composition of the non-commercial fishery, the species composition is different compared to the commercial fisheries. And you know, that's the razor fish, right?
They're
mostly found in what, sandy bottom areas, so you know, not all of the surveys are able to capture Nabeta, because the underwater census surveys that the Science Center does are mostly done on hard bottom substrate.
Yeah, where you can actually see something too. But interestingly enough, Josh, and I know you've heard this and I have, that people get so jacked up and so excited about catching one, and they're all about the same size. Oh, big one, you know. They're all about the same kind, but it's a matter of uncle knows where to go to catch Nabeta, and they don't go to the store. They go home with the fishermen.
And that's what we've been seeing with a lot of different fisheries, Kona crab, the bottom fish especially, even all the way to the longliners. It's history and experience that'll tell you where.
Okay, that's why one of the things that we want to do is we talk about these things. Some of the stuff that's going to go on at this meeting that we're talking about at Wailea up on Maui, I guess maybe, Malloy, the science end of it, what you do is you prepare the data that gets presented here, and then there's a decision-making process. What do you anticipate some of the decision-makers, some of the items up for discussion and decision are going to be?
One of the big decisions that the SSC, the Scientific and Statistical Committee, is going to take on this 129th meeting for the insular fisheries is the they have to specify an acceptable biological catch for the deep seven fishery, bottom fish fishery. And this is one of the requirements under the Magnuson Act and National Standard 1 that the SSC, it's their role to give the council a harvest limit for to account for the new scientific information. So that's the responsibility of the SSC to specify what we call an acceptable biological catch.
Okay, let's go to this number you're talking about. Is it because they say, all right, at this number, the species will be self-propagating? In other words, the species will survive. And, you know, but it doesn't take much to go over that line. Once you get overfished, doesn't it take an awful long time to repair that species?
Right. So this number we're talking about here, the ABC, is the limit to which you account for the biological information as well as the scientific information that went into the assessment, making sure that the assessment is good enough to determine what's the real status of the stock. So Now you mentioned it doesn't take a lot to to go beyond that limit,
mm-hmm.
or for the fishery to be experiencing overfishing or the stock to be overfished. The assessment said that based on the new information, there is a low probability, only a 16, if I remember correctly, there's only 16% probability of the stock to become overfished and a 17% probability of the fishery to experience overfishing. So the numbers are, it means that the stock is healthy.
Yeah, and that's
and the fishery is sustainable.
Josh, I think that almost, by the way, a lot of this stuff you can research on your own at wpcouncil.org. All of this stuff is going to be posted so that you can get a handle on this. But I think the bottom line goes into almost everybody, especially in this bottom fishing, because like you said, Josh, there's not as many people doing it as you think. But there are people that want it. So, I mean, if you go to a favorite restaurant and you're getting your paca there, that restaurant needs to get that fish. And so nobody wants a limit, right? So when a limit is finally decided upon or comes into fact, then what happens?
Well, if the limit is reached, then the fishery closes.
Right. Yeah.
And so there's no more fishing.
At least the commercial part of it closes for sure.
Well, the whole
fishery. I was going to say, however, is that monitored? I know already some of the commercial bottom fish guys that I know that we all know, they respect that. I mean, when it's over, it's over. They go do something else, or they catch something else, or they do something else. But there's a lot of, weekend warriors out there, they don't pay any attention to anything. Who enforces that stuff?
Well, you have the U.S. Coast Guard, who's mm-hmm. out on the water, and they have a fisheries enforcement division that when they're checking on your flares and your life jackets, they're also supposed to be checking, going down through the checklist, making sure mm-hmm. that mm-hmm. you're following the fishery rules as well.
Yeah, like what's in the fish box there, brother?
Right.
Yeah,
yeah. And so that becomes a federal offense mm-hmm. if you're out there in the federal waters or checked by the Coast Guard. But you also have Division of Ocean Conservation and Resource Enforcement, DOCARE.
DOCARE, of course.
Right. So DOCARE is out there at the docks and out in the water as well. So, and then you also have the NOAA Office for Law Enforcement that goes and will do the cases and prosecuting if it comes to that.
And that's why I asked that, gang, because the rest of it is you and me. And it used to be that, you see somebody doing something and you just shrug your shoulders. Now it becomes incumbent on you to say, you know what? I'm respecting the decision that just got made, and I'm not catching opaka paka right now because it's closed. But that guy did. So in order to keep the playing field, I guess, level between a recreational guy and a commercial guy, is people that are out there, they should be the eyes and the ears, because you just can't enforce all those miles of ocean. We just don't have the resources to do that.
Right. Self-enforcement is really critical, and also education and outreach for people to know when the season is closed or once the quota has been reached. I mean, there's a lot of misinformation out there, like, once the annual catch limit has been reached, it's not only the commercial fishery that closes, because mm-hmm. the state rule says possession of, during the close season or when the fishery closes, the possession of a bottom fish, a deep seven bottom fish is prohibited.
That's any, so by
that's
the way.
Anybody. Yeah, 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 that's everyone.
Yeah. Incidentally, just out of curiosity, because as you mentioned before, and we've talked about this on previous programs, where you come from, I would imagine that some of the best practices now are trying to repair what was, in some respects, a big overtake in certain areas of the Philippines where there's lots of people and all fishing in the same area. Is that similar to what we have here?
Very different. Mm-hmm. Here you can go around, drive around the island, and you would see a couple of guys with their rod and reels in the water. But, back home, you can see if you look out on the ocean, you can see dots of boats
everywhere.
So there's high effort in that area as compared to here. And I go diving in American Samoa and sometimes here in Hawaii, the situation in the water is very different.
Explain. I mean, it's very different because here you see things and there you don't.
Exactly.
Yeah.
You can swim around the reef back in the Philippines where you can just see the structure, but you hardly see any fish.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting because what would be thought of as the decline of the reef is really the decline of the people that make the reefs, the other little things that grow on the coral and the things that eat them.
Yeah, and it's a complicated process. Yeah. It's the whole ecosystem dynamics that's at work, and you know, you got very different dynamics here, and even every island is different. Every side of the island is different. Mm. You can have an ecosystem that's relatively natural and intact, but you don't see a lot of corals. Well, because it's a high energy environment, you got only boulders that can, you know, that stays in that area. Mm. And but even though they're boulders, it's a three-dimensional structure, and therefore you see a lot of fish. Yeah. And you don't expect corals to be growing on those high wave areas. But
it's so interesting because, I mean, you know, and I guess maybe sometimes, let's say somebody comes from one of those places that has been overfished. When they get here and look in the water, they must think, oh, this is perfect. I can eat here. We got everything here.
Right. And it also it also reflects the kind of management each area has. You know, here in Hawaii, you've got two levels of management in terms of fishery, the state and also the federal, on the federal side. And, you know, it would be great to have a management system that complement each other so that you fill in the regulatory gap and you address everything.
That's a great point. And Josh, maybe we can comment to that, to the point where, you know, what's going on here on Maui with this science meeting? It must be pretty interesting because everybody that's working in it is under a deadline to report, you know, to get this done by this, to get this done by that. And then what length of time is going to be covered by some of the decisions get made as far as maybe some of the rule changes of that? What length of time does that usually cover? How often do we go through this whole process?
So the council meets three times a year. Mm-hmm. And so the Scientific and Statistical Committee, the SSC, meets three times a year as well before the council meeting. And so this meeting coming up is on June 6th through 8th at the Wailea Beach Resort in Maui. And once they meet, their recommendations will be gathered up and written into a final report on the 8th. And then the staff has pretty much the weekend to work on it and get it finalized, because Monday we'll start the council meeting. Mm-hmm. And so the council will hear it, will hear the SSC's recommendations, and will make a recommendation to the federal government. So for some of these actions, like bottom fish, it'll be a final action and it'll get implemented.
For what period of time are some of the typical implementations? I know that probably, Malloy, that probably varies. You know, based on, let's say we're talking about this particular decision's going to be made on when is the limit reached and when do we stop? Is that constantly being adjusted?
We monitor the fisheries almost near real time, because fishermen are required to submit their trip reports, before
every trip, right?
Yeah. So for bottom fish, pretty much there's a near real-time monitoring of the catch. So what if and then the Science Center does this projection on when, depending on the cumulative catch, when the potential closure date would be, and then that would be announced to that would be announced to the public. And but for this action here by the SSC and the council for the bottom fish, the fishery will start on September 1st. Mm-hmm. So we have to get this new catch limit out before...
All decided and implemented.
Right.
Because from when it begins September 1st, it's going to go through when the limit gets reached.
Right.
I think a lot of our listeners are also viewers of the Wicked Tuna program that I always have these guys on. And that fishery is extremely controlled. In other words, they know the last fish that comes up, that's it. Everybody has to stop fishing. Josh, do you expect, I know that's a reality show and everything else, we all get a kick out of it because we're fishermen, but isn't that in some respects what we're trying to achieve here? By everybody realizing, okay, we've reached that date or we've reached that limit, we got to stop.
I think that's the national move to make that the ideal situation, you know, like deadliest catch or where they're tracking their catch all the way to the limit. And if they're out there, they get called back to the docks because the limit's reached. But I think in reality, it doesn't work in some areas, especially out in the islands where you don't have the millions of dollars that are being pumped into fisheries. And while we'd like to be there, because then we could have the season open all the way till that last fish is caught in the limit, what really happens is we're going to have to project out that, we're at 90% of the catch. we better figure out what day that might be the next day.
They can almost nail it, right? Yeah.
We've been pretty good so far. I mean, we've underestimated a lot. Like, we left some of that fish still on the table, but I would say that's probably better than going over the limit and having to subtract from our limit the next year.
Okay, let's sort of wrap in a way to wrap this up, Malloy. The basic reason that this particular science and statistical committee gets together prior to the general council meeting is to give them the data that they need to make quantitative decisions for a certain period of time.
Right. So the scientific and statistical committee packages the all the scientific information and provide a scientific recommendation for the council to make its decision. Yeah. So typically we council staff would present several options based on the scientific information that the SSC provided to the council, and then the council can make their scientific management decision based on that scientific advice.
Yeah, and some of this that we're talking about is not yet available on the website, but it will be. So what you want, you need to go to wpconsul.org and take a look at this. Wpconsul.org. Okay, now, just so that people can put things in perspective, Josh, now that Dr. Sabater has sort of explained this and the science end of it and what the purpose is, let's talk about what we're going to talk about the next time we get together, which is going to be just prior to this or just after this meeting.
Right. So after the scientific and statistical committee meeting, we'll run our normal June council meeting. Yeah. And so the 173rd meeting will be June 10th to 13th at the same place, the Wailea Beach Resort Marriott in Wailea on Maui. And we'll be discussing everything from the Hawaii archipelago issues, but this one will also include Marianas, American Samoa, as well as other issues in program planning and research. And
it is an absolute great opportunity, folks, for you to see some of the big picture. Some of you on Maui have never had the experience of doing this. And there's going to be, and we'll talk about this in the next show, but there's also going to be a Fisher's Forum that's part of the Maui meeting, right? And this is duplicating kind of what we've been doing on Oahu lately, these meetings, and bringing it to Maui.
Right, and we haven't had one in Maui ever. Yeah. So this, we'll be talking about bottomfish, it's titled Going Deep, Hawaii's Bottomfish Story. And there's been so much going on in bottomfish in the past 10 years that it's about time that Hawaii learns about the bottomfish fishery in Hawaii and is proud of what all these fishermen are doing.
Okay, and that's going to come up next time. So for Dr. Malloy Sabater and Josh DeMello, I'm Mike Buck. Thanks for listening. Remember, if you want to hear something on the program, it's pretty easy. Drop me a line. The easiest way is drop me a line at themikebuckshow@gmail.com. And don't forget wpconsul.org. And next time we get together, we're going to talk about some really good opportunities to win some really cool stuff. And some of that's going to be explained next time. In the meantime, you have a good weekend. Have a nice, safe Memorial Day weekend, and we'll see you next week on Go Fish. Aloha.